Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 413, being recorded on the 25th of February, 2022, with special guest Stephen Kaufman. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, we have Cynthia, and of course, our special guest, Stephen, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's just cover the news from this past week. Not a whole lot, Cynthia, I noticed. You had a couple in there, and I think I have one that I want to cover. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one that is in public preview, there are a number of WordPress enhancements for app service. Now you're able to optimize on things like caching, image compression. You're also have the flexibility to choose amongst a number of different hosting plans. And now I think there are additional configuration that you can use for your WordPress that is deployed on app service. And the other one is the GA of Direct Enterprise Agreement on Azure Cost Management and Billing. So now straight from the Azure portal, you're able to manage a lot of your enterprise agreement or EA roles. You're able to create and manage a number of different hierarchy for your enrollment. So you can now split it into different department, account, subscription, which will be a lot easier in terms of internal billing, where one EA agreement covers a number of different subscriptions that are spread across a number of different departments. You're able to look at properties and policies, and of course, look at all the different usage and charges. And one thing that I think is really interesting is that you're also be able to view and track Microsoft Azure consumption commitment balance. So that's an agreement that I know I think we have with a number of different customers. It is usually a commitment you make upfront, but you will still have to go through the consumption of it. So this GA also helps you look at like how close or how far away you are from that commitment. And those are the updates from me. CG, I know you had one around Spring Cloud.
Yeah, so Spring Cloud is something that's certainly very near and dear to me. I have deployed it with some financial services customers, and they've been very happy with it. But this was, last year when they only had the standard tier. So there was just one other thing. There was also a basic tier as well for development, and then there was a standard tier, which offered virtual CPUs and memory for your entire cluster so that you can spin up these Spring Boot applications. And that's really what it's meant for. It's an easy way for customers that have that use Spring Boot in Java today to host it in Azure without having to worry about how those apps are built, how they're run, how they're containerized. You know, under the covers, it uses a couple of AKS clusters for you, but the customer never sees that. Customer just sees this big, Spring Cloud cluster, and they can just throw applications at it, and it just gets built and runs automatically. So it's really great from that perspective. It's a great DevOps story for most customers that use it. But one of the things missing has been, getting a good support model from Spring for the Spring Boot runtime itself. And I think now with the enterprise tier of Spring Boot, you can actually get support from, it includes support for Spring. It also, the maximum number of virtual CPUs is 16, and the maximum memory is 32 gigabytes per cluster. So that means you set up one cluster and you can put in as many apps as you can stuff into that size. So I think that's something that a lot of customers have been asking for, is that support model to be in there in case, Spring Boot application behaves differently in the cloud, right? It's kind of leads to some of the topics we're going to talk to Stephen about today, which is, how you run these applications properly in the cloud. But so that's the round of news for today. And let's turn it over to our special guest, Stephen. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Please introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell us what you're passionate about in Azure, and we'll take it from there.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much. So my name is Steve Kaufman. I am a chief architect within Microsoft, within the CSU group. And I've been with Microsoft now for almost 22 years. So it's kind of amazing to think back that it's been that long. My journey, I started out with Azure very early on. Before that, it was integration. And so when, the journey to the cloud started, it was all about here's another platform to do integration with. And then quickly moved over to, okay, how do we get all these applications into Azure? And how do we do this between more of a lift and shift versus a cloud native? And then, of course, cloud native blew up. And then what does that really now mean to everybody? And people have different ideas about what that looks like.
Yeah, I'm sure you're in customers just like I am on a regular basis. And, at the CXO level, the word cloud native is thrown about like, it's some magical wand or something like that, right? Just wave it over all your applications and it's all good. When you meet customers, how do you approach this? How do you kind of explain to them, what they're signing up for when they say they want something that's cloud native, especially when it's on Azure?
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's really part of a two-part discussion. One is, are they creating brand new applications? If we're dealing with a greenfield application, then we can really start brand new with cloud native. The other part of this is if they've got existing applications, they want to keep those applications, but re-architect them. And so, then we're kind of recreating them in the cloud, but we're starting from, call it the blueprint or, what they had on premises, but we're taking advantage of the patterns and the services that are in the cloud with a brand new implementation. So that's typically how I have that conversation.
What are some of the benefits of, for the second scenario of moving to the cloud, what are some benefits of that migration or re-architecting or re-platforming, modernization, whatever you want to call it, versus say like the lift and shift method where you just like take everything and move it to VM?
Sure. So lift and shift, I mean, it's faster because you're not making any changes to the application. You're just making changes to the infrastructure. And so then I can do that, in a much faster format. But when I start to take advantage of, platform as a service services, I start to remove things from my application that are custom coded. And so now I'm reducing my technical debt. I'm reducing the things that I have to own. I have to test, performance tune, all the rest of those things. And I can replace them with services that are there where in, the case of Azure, Microsoft is doing those activities. So, the speed to get my application built using PaaS services, just leapfrogs what I could do if I were having to write everything myself. So I think the other is that when you look at the services that are available in Azure, there's just such a wide spectrum of everything from data to IoT to application services to telemetry, everything that you need to run a modern application.
Yeah, and I think the challenge has always been, there's all these services that are available out there. And to be able to find out, which of these services has the API or the feature that we need in our application, right? And oftentimes they're hidden, you need somebody to go into in depth into each of these services to say, oh yeah, I could use that from there and I could use that from there. And I could take out a whole chunk of code from my application and replace it with that. But that's where, I think you and your team come in, right, Steve? You guys are the cloud solution architects and you have that level of depth. But how do you approach it when customers say, okay, we've got this existing application, what's it going to take? Is it going to be, like a whole 1 or 2 year thing? Do we do it side by side? Do we do it in small bits and pieces? What's the kind of general approach there?
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with, what is the customer ultimately trying to get to? And are they going to operate, where they've got their existing application on-prem and they're going to do a big bang approach and they say, okay, we are going to run them side by side for a while, or is this something that you start to take off services or pieces off of the existing application, and you use things like the strangler pattern to be able to, you know, keep what's there, but move pieces over into the cloud. And so a lot of it has to get to that business continuity and how do they continue to do business as they're making this transformation. And so depending on where the customers are in their journey and where they are in their cloud maturity, you tend to have, you know, somewhere on that spectrum. You know, I think the other piece is, you know, when we look at customers that are looking to do things brand new, right? So truly cloud native, born in the cloud, you get a little bit more flexibility because you do have that ability to start small, look at the services, and then build what it is that you are ultimately going to bring to, you know, your customers or into the market.
I think you used the word strangler pattern. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit just for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea of a strangler pattern is that you've got something that's running, and you're putting a you're tying rope around it, if you will, and that becomes the core of what runs. But anything new or anything you're going to take out of that gets put into the cloud, and you're ultimately making that tighter and tighter and tighter, so you have less and less inside of what you've now wrapped that rope around, where all the new features are now in the cloud in the new environment. And ultimately, you've got nothing left in the on-prem. Everything is now in the cloud.
So within the Azure platform, there are services like Apps that we talked about, or Spring Cloud earlier, that they host services. And there are things like APIM that are more integration or logic apps. When you are approaching, say, a scenario, like, how do you communicate with your customers on all of these different components, and how do you think about putting different aspects of the platform together?
Yeah, no, that really becomes an interesting conversation, because where do you start? And so for me personally, I tend to start with, where are we hosting? What language are we writing in? What environment are we going to be working with? And so then, you know, we've got a number of different options for hosting, and whether it's Spring or whether it's a web app or whether it's Kubernetes, right? You've got a whole grouping of these application hosts. I mean, it might even be that we're doing just Azure Functions. So depending on what this application is or what the solution is, we try to figure out which host makes the most amount of sense, what's going to provide the capabilities that's needed, and then start to build out from there. How is data going to be handled? What data services do we need? Is it one data source, right? One database? Is it going to be dealing with storage? Is it going to be dealing with an API? And so you start to build out this platform. And so we start kind of at the core, and then you keep adding on. So whether it's data, whether it's APIM, whether it's, you know, even a combination, I might have a web app that is my core hosting, but then I might have microservices that are running in function apps. And so, you know, how do we start to look at what those requirements are for the application itself, and then match which services make sense for those capabilities?
Yeah, one of the at least tenets I've always had to know that if an application is, you know, kind of ready for the cloud is it can run anywhere, right, without having any dependencies, right? The moment your application says, oh, I need a dependency on this file location or this, you know, drive or that particular schema or something, then you know you're not cloud ready, right? Yeah. You're not native. And so that's like a process, I guess, you have to go through, because I know coming for developers, we're used to that, right? And we have to kind of throw out all those old ideas from our head and start off with these new ones born in the cloud.
Exactly. You know, I think one of the other pieces when we talk about born in the cloud that becomes so important is, you know, we as developers and as we're starting to look at what the capabilities of the solution are going to be, we tend to look at the functional requirements. When we have an application in the cloud, we have to make sure that we are treating the non-functional requirements at the same level as the functional requirements. I have to make sure that I'm, you know, looking at operations, at monitoring, telemetry, security, but all of the rest of those things to create the full end-to-end application. we want to make sure that we're not just putting an application into the cloud the same way that we wrote an on-premise application with the same assumptions. So that's the other piece that we have to keep in mind as we're creating a cloud-native application.
That's actually a very good point because, I mean, those non-functional requirements did exist on-premises, right? But they were different.
Yes.
Right? That maybe you used like some kind of a Tivoli software or something for management or, you know, whatever you did on-premises. You may have had a Splunk service for logging, for example, and now you move to the cloud and you have to kind of translate that to what makes sense when you move these things to the cloud, right? How do you change those to the correct services out there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other piece is the process of getting into production. And so that whole DevOps aspect, you know, we look at automation. And so how do we take the application, automate the builds, automate the testing, automate the deployment, and make sure that we can do that frequently with as little manual intervention as possible. And, you know, that's another shift from working in an on-prem environment to working into a cloud environment. So when we talk about all of the different Azure services, yes, we've got all the Azure services for the solution. There's also the Azure services that allow us to do all of that automation and deployment, the tracking, all of the things that come with services like Azure DevOps and GitHub, et cetera.
Steve, I'm curious from a performance perspective, can we make the blanket statement that apps will run more performant on the cloud? Or is that a misconception, depending on the specific scenarios?
So very, very good question. What I would say is you have the ability to scale far faster and easier than you did on premises. You know, many organizations, it was hard to get additional capacity. It was hard to get additional servers. And so that took time. You were also trying to deal with scale at your peak point. And then when you weren't operating at peak, you tended to have excess capacity. And in the cloud, you use what's needed, right? You can deal with auto scale and scale up, scale down. And so when I think about performance, there's the, you know, that foundational performance, right, of being able to throw, you know, all of the needed requirements from the services and the scalability at the application. But you also have all of the tools for doing the individual testing of those services. So can I do things in a web app that's faster than I might have been able to do it on premises? And the great thing is that you have the ability to pick different tiers of service to be able to meet the performance that you need, or to be able to grow as your solution, the number of customers that come in to use your solution grows. And so that process is just a quicker, easier process.
I know Cynthia asked a question early on before we started, so I'll ask it on her behalf. Everyone thinks of cloud native as being related to containers, right? Yeah. We feel like containers is the catch-all for cloud native. And I don't know, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that containers are, I mean, they're amazing, but they are one tool in the toolbox. And so, you know, when we talk about where do we host the solutions, these applications, yes, we've got containers, but we've also got other hosting capabilities within the cloud. And so part of it is making sure that we know what we're trying to accomplish. So I don't want to have to go set up an entire, Kubernetes containerized environment if what I need are a set of microservices that can run in a functions environment. And so part of it is a spectrum of how much control do I need versus, you know, do I just need something that's going to run the code that's going to perform my service, my solution? And so Kubernetes, for me, is part of just that continuum.
Yeah, I think it's also, you know, I mentioned Spring Cloud earlier, how, you know, they are blurring the line between containers and non-containers because you actually throw your code at Spring Cloud like it's ordinary Java code, right? You just give it, send it in. And it gets built and containerized and put into a Kubernetes cluster and run for you all automatically. And you never see any of that, right? As far as you're concerned, you just threw the code at it. And so, yeah, there are certain advantages to containers, at least, you know, from running it, because they're so easy to run on different platforms and Linux, Windows, et cetera. So that can be abstracted away, but we all know that dealing with containers is not an easy thing. And customers still struggle with that from a day-to-day basis.
They do. And I also want to bring up, you know, services like container instances, where if I don't need to have the overhead or, you know, all of the responsibility of setting up everything for a Kubernetes environment, I can still do something with container instances and essentially put a workload into a, you know, a single container. And so again, it's that spectrum. It's what do I need? And the services are there based on, you know, those different options. You know, I think one of the things, if I may, that, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, how do you know or how do you pick which services based on, you know, what's the requirement? And one of the things that I also talk to customers about is the guidance and all of the information from the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. And so they have a tool map. And so you can go into that tool map and get a really good idea of all of the different tools based on what category they're in. And so then you also have an idea of, okay, here are the categories I should be thinking of. Now, the CNCF does have a lot of, I'll say, focus on containers, on Kubernetes. And so that's just one thing. If you know, if you do go take a look at the material that's there, is, you know, just know that that is one view that's focused on containers rather than that spectrum of hosting.
Awesome. Yeah. So if, you know, Cynthia, do we have any more questions for Steve? I think this has been a really good refresher on cloud native. I know we had Robert Vetter on maybe a year or so ago, maybe feels like longer. He also talked about it, but I think you brought a nice new modern perspective to it. Cynthia, anything else for Steve?
No, thanks for the discussion. It's been really enlightening.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.